This is Phil Farron.
Wow, that was weak.
I've just been back from the dentist.
This is Phil Farron, and I am driving around. I'm not really driving home. Not yet. And on the way home, I was supposed to record the podcast, and I forgot. So I'm going to get Aiden at this point, but I'm leaving a little early, and that way we can just drive around, we can talk a little bit, talky-talky-talky, and then we pick up Aiden and go back home. I have a slushy with me in the car. Not a slushy, but a smoothie, I guess they call them. So that's what the big dramatic pause was. So everything is puttering along. It's just puttering along. Dustin had a really good multiple sessions with his new prefector. That went really well. So thank God for that. That seems to be good. He had 3 sessions in a row with him last weekend. So it was Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then this week it's been Wednesday, Thursday with him. And then he worked Monday, had Tuesday off, but then it will be Friday, Saturday, Sunday at Cox this weekend. And then I'm not sure what's happening next week. You know, we just go from week to week to week, and we'll just figure this out as we go. But despite all the momentary confusion kicking around, when he lost all the sessions he had scheduled, because the prefector he had scheduled them all with actually requested family leave, I think because his father was, you know, at end of life. So that that just kind of sloshed everything around. But the academic people called a couple of favors in, I don't know, found some people who had never been preceptors before and said, hey, can you do this? And they said yes, and Dustin got lined up with them and seems to be really enjoying his prefector. So all that's good. I think I'm talking okay today. I did just get back from the dentist, and we had the tooth prepped for the crown and did the impressions, and then here in about 2 weeks or so, I'll get the actual crown put on. But because it was interesting, because I had my regular cleaning appointment yesterday. So for my cleaning appointment, I threw on the costume that I'm going to wear tomorrow, which is Crazy Paisley Day. The object of Crazy Paisley Day is to wear as many types of paisley as possible, preferably all clashing. So that's fun. And I did that yesterday. I'll do that tomorrow and Saturday as well, but then that left going down today. And I keep a list of the costumes that I wear to the dentist so that I don't repeat them. Although, Crazy Paisley Day, I did that six years ago now, but nobody remembered. So, yeah, and I don't expect them to. But it was fun. So I showed up down there. I got tickled at my dentist yesterday because when she came in and we were talking and stuff, she said, well, this isn't normally your day to dress up. I said, no, that's fine. I just threw on a costume to come down. Oh, that's so sweet. We really love it when you do that. She said, but, you know, you're coming in tomorrow too, so you don't have to wear a costume. But I looked at her. I said, are you telling me you don't want me to wear a costume? No, I'm not saying. So we went back and forth for a little while, and of course I wore a costume down there, which was just the wear it pink costume, which is the big candy cane costume. They all like that. Well, what that meant is that I did wear that costume as well to drop off Aiden at school because my appointment was at 9:15, so I just dropped off Aiden and went straight there. So normally there is someone on upper management, I think, at the school who is greeting the cars that come in. And there's the principal, and she does it sometimes, but mostly, I think it's an assistant principal. Both of them are fun. And so I hadn't seen the assistant principal in a while, and I just saw her again yesterday, and I went, hey, I haven't seen you in a while. So we jabbered a little bit. And so I was kind of looking for her because I was in costume today, because I'm not usually in costume on Thursday. And once I dropped Aiden off and turned around and started coming, I realized it was the principal was guiding the cars in. And of course, she turned and smiled and laughed and wanted a picture and all that kind of good stuff. And they were jabbering. She said, hey, I have to tell you something. She said, the principals of all the schools, we get together, I don't know when, periodically something, and they all do a presentation about their schools. And what's going on. I said, I understand. Kind of like State of the Union thing, you know. So she said, and I did mine, and I included you. I said, okay. She said, I showed pictures of you, and everybody seemed to enjoy it. And she said, well, afterwards, the director of the entire K-12, or no, what is it here? K-something? Oh, I used to know what this was. Anyways, whatever school system this is here, the Springfield Public School System, the director for the whole thing, Dr. Leahy, I think her name is, she came up to the principal for Pleasant View, and she said, please extend my personal invitation to Phil to come to the volunteers dinner that I guess they have in the spring, because he's a volunteer too. So I have an invitation to come to the volunteer dinner now because I come to the school dressed in costumes. You just never know where this stuff is going to spread. So there you go. So that's fine. So costumes are good. Writing's good. Puttering along. I'm a little behind this week. There's just been some unusual things. I'm settling into the new schedule with Dustin, and so, you know, we're working that out, and on Tuesday, I didn't have Aiden at all, and so I kind of made hay while the sun shines. You know, I had a breakfast and a dinner with a friend on Tuesday, so that kind of disrupted things a little bit, but I'm not that far off, so I think everything will be fine. I've just got to kind of buckle down the last half of this week and get going. And I'm a little bit ahead anyways, because I had a couple of weeks that were front loaded in September. So it'll be fine. You know, it'll be fine. But there, it's always interesting to me because things kind of turn different ways. It's because I get this idea, oh, well, of course they would react to it this way. And so then I start writing that, and then I realize, oh, wait a minute, if I do that, then that doesn't make sense, so I gotta change this over here. But it all comes one stage at a time. It's not like I get all overwhelmed. But by the time it's all said and done, and it's like, oh, well, that's interesting. You know, so I have kind of a interesting little twist on things, and I think it's gonna be fine. I think it's gonna be fine. I'm turning around now because it's getting about the time when I should be heading that direction to go get Aiden. So, you know, so it's all good. Everything's good. Life is wonderful. Life is amazing. It's all good. So I just heard briefly something that was being discussed by Brent Weinstein and Heather Haying. And when I heard it, I thought, oh, I should just chat about that. So as I have been doing, I just grabbed the transcript, gave it to ChatGPT-5, told it. I want you to summarize, but specifically, I wanted it to summarize in the section where they were talking about losing a common narrative. Because they transitioned back online, and what brought this up in Brent's mind was the fact that he and Heather had done a Camino. So I guess there's a trail. There's a bunch of trails, but there's an original trail, and it's a trail for pilgrim. You make a pilgrimage. And the person who had designed the trail had picked when they would stop on the trail, let's put it that way, had designed for them a fairly aggressive schedule of walking most days 15 miles a day, some days 20 miles a day. And, you know, they had a lot of interesting principles that they teased out of that. And the principles that they teased out of that were lesson one, pushing limits exposes every defect. So any old injuries that you had that you aren't fully recovered from, walking 15 miles a day, sooner or later, it's gonna open that up. And lesson two was you discover hidden capacities and tolerances for discomfort. Lesson three, equilibrium is the key. So you have to earn back whatever debit you create each day. So, you know, if you go out and you walk that 15 miles, you're not gonna go out that night and then swim around the swimming pool. You know, you're going to rest, put it back on. And lesson four that they had added was the culture shock on return. They were talking about the culture shock, that when you get outside of this, what I would call a hothouse environment here in the United States, all these things that you just assume are the natural flows of life, and you get out somewhere else where people do things differently. First of all, that can be a culture shock, but then you can have just as much of a culture shock once you're away from those things that you've done all your life, and you come back to them having seen how other people live. Because once you see how other people live and how other people react to life, then you look at those and go, oh, well, you know, that makes sense, you know. And then you come back to the States and see the way things are here, and it can be a culture shock. And they were experiencing that they were looking at it and saying, wow, you know. And one of the things, especially, that they were seeing was the fact that our entire culture here seems to be tuned towards hyper-specialization and selling you stuff and like that and like that and like that. But in addition to all that, Brent Weinstein was saying that he was seeing that the brief objectivity that you have when you come back because you've been away from it looks and sees other things, like why our online fights feel tailor-made to keep us from understanding each other. And that then brought them into a discussion about common narrative. Because they were saying, I'm going to get another slurp of my smoothie here. They were saying, in the olden times, you know, Walter Cronkite would come on and that's the way it is. You know, he'd give the news. Now, whether that was the way it is or not, I don't know, because there was a lot of stuff going on even back in Walter Cronkite's day. But At least everybody thought that's the way it was. Or at least a lot of people believe that's the way it was. And there are things that are fundamentally different. Whereas in the past, there was a shared narrative moving forward. You know, they were wondering if we're simply past an age in which any kind of synchronicity is possible. And they were talking about the difference between how people experience life now. And I've seen this in my friends' marriages, where I can think of at least one marriage where one of the parties in that marriage has become swept up into whatever the latest upsetting craze or fad is, whether it's, you know, Christian nationalism, the really extreme type of Christian nationalism, or it's conspiracy theories about this, that, and the other. That you can have one person in the marriage that has just been swept into that, and the other person in the marriage is just completely on a different page. But the problem is that most people spend a lot of their time on digital devices, and even when they're together, they're still looking at their digital devices. So now you have this issue where people can be both together and separate at the same time, where you can be in the same room, but you're texting someone or you're reading the news that's all curated just for you and the types of things you click on. So while you may be sitting there reading about all the latest conspiracy theories and how, you know, the banks are going to steal all your money tomorrow, your partner is sitting there and just, you know, reading dad jokes or something. And you two could not be further apart. And what Brent Weinstein, again, was coming back to was this idea of, you know, is it ever possible to create this synchronicity? Can we at least create some rituals of shared intake, like all agreed nightly sources or weekly roundup, you know, whatever. Is that, how do we get back to this shared narrative? How do we come up with a narrative that can be shared, across all perspectives, that there is something that we can latch on to? And my response is, there is something we can all latch on to. Treat others as you wish to be treated. That's pretty simple. It's been handed down for thousands and thousands of years in lots of different cultures. Treat others as you wish to be treated. Love your neighbor. Although love your neighbor is definitely not the same thing as treat others as you wish to be treated. Treat others as you wish to be treated is a highly watered down version of love your neighbor. But Christianity, specifically the teachings of Christ, provides a very clear shared narrative that works very, very well. Now people will look at some of the things that have been done in Christianity's name, and they'll say, well, what about this? What about that? What about the other? Look at all the atrocities, et cetera, et cetera. None of those atrocities have a grounding in anything that Jesus said. It was only the people who came after Jesus, it was the only people who were trying to capitalize on the political power that people who are followers of Christ would allow them to capitalize on the political power over those people. But when you just go back and look at the words of Christ, there's nothing there that couldn't be embraced as part of a shared narrative. And there is nothing there that, if it was embraced as part of the shared narrative, wouldn't result in success. Because the most successful life is not the one who acquires and acquires and acquires and acquires. And Jesus told a parable about the rich young ruler that specifically dealt with this. Jesus absolutely does not teach that just gaining wealth and gaining power is the secret to life. That's not what he teaches. He teaches seeking the kingdom. And in conjunction with that seeking of the kingdom, he teaches sacrifice. Take up your cross and follow me. You know, if your enemy slaps one cheek, turn the other cheek. If your enemy compels you to go a mile, go 2 miles. There's always a quality, both in Jesus Christ's life and Jesus Christ's teaching, about voluntary self-sacrifice. And Jordan Peterson is absolutely correct when he says that voluntary self-sacrifice is the basis for any successful culture, any successful society. So if we are going to create a society that's going to be successful, and to do so, we are absolutely aware that we need a shared narrative, which we do. We don't need to spend time thrashing around trying to figure out where we can find such a narrative or how we can invent it ourselves. The shared narrative of Christ already exists. It has already been successful, and it is already deeply saturated our entire culture, to the point you don't even recognize the saturation is there. But without Christianity, we would be living in a very, very different culture. There's a guy, I've mentioned him before, I should have looked up his name, it's not that important, but he's been sitting in his rooms for 35 years, and he thinks he's come up with the ultimate theory of everything because he just sat in his room and thought about it. Well, one of the things that he ended up believing is that there's a universal consciousness. And he has some pithy little sayings about what consciousness does, and, you know, that he's figured out. Okay, great. So then he tells this story trying to justify his own theory about how that he was speaking at this church because it was a cheap to rent for an auditorium, and, you know, two doctorates in theology are sitting there, and he asked them, I don't want you to give me theology. I just want, in very simple terms, you to describe who God is. And so he said they went off and conferred and came up with like six things, where they said, these are the qualities of God. And he said, they came back and told me those things. And I mean, that lined up, he said, I think five out of six of them lined directly up with the idea of a universal consciousness. And so he took that as a victory on his part as to how smart he was and how close he was to the truth. Because these ancient quote-unquote religions, and in his mind, these ancient fables, you know, arrived at the same point that his empirical deduction did. That this just shows that you can have a universal consciousness without needing a God, because it all comes back to these traits. And I thought, okay, wait a minute. Wait a minute, hold it. Except that we have had a shared narrative for many, many years, we've had a shared narrative. And that shared narrative has been the Bible. And the Bible has been the foundation of all literature in Western thought. The connections of Western literature to the Bible and images and allegories from the Bible are profound. And even if it's two or three generations down, like you get the Bible, which inspires something like Dante's Inferno, and then that inspires something else and inspires something else. Even the fact is, the core ideas exist in our language because of the Judeo-Christian belief systems. If all those core ideas exist in the Judeo-Christian belief system, and they have been infiltrated into our language for us to talk about things like universality and timelessness and omnipotence and omniscience and these concepts that have all been passed down from the Bible, from God speaking about himself, to where we have these concepts now of things that can be those things. If we then sit and take those concepts and pretend like they have no inheritance all the way back through to the Bible, and then we ask theologians to give us six things that seem to delineate God, and then we puff out our chest and say, see, my theory already has those six things. Yeah, your theory has those things because you inherited it from the language that you've been using, the concepts that you've been using, which inherited all its stuff from the Bible. So again, this is one of those things. We have a common narrative. We have a narrative that works, has worked for many, many years. And the only true possibility for us to get out of the mess we're in is to get back to that narrative. And we as Christians need to be salt and light. We just need to go out and spread his joy and spread his love and spread his forgiveness and his kindness and see if we can lead and point people to him, whether in conventional or unconventional ways. This is Phil Ferrand. I have not made it home, but I'm getting ready to pick Aiden, and then I'm heading that direction. Have a great weekend.